First of all, thank you everybody for coming. Really appreciate you attending our session today. And second of all, thanks for having us. This is the first time Adaptiva has attended Australia Ignite. It's been a wonderful week for us. It's been great to meet the customers and learn about what's happening down here and show people our technology. And we're big Ignite attendees in the United States. And Chicago and Atlanta and Orlando are great cities in their own right. But I think Gold Coast is a better venue. So thank you so much for having us. So my name is Jim Souders. I'm the CEO of Adaptiva. Joining me today to talk is Chad Kuntz, one of our senior solutions engineers. Today's session is going to be hopefully a combination of some slides, demonstration of our technology, but also we'd encourage you to ask questions. Don't feel obliged to hold them to the end. Raise your hand if something we're explaining requires more description to you, or if you want to find out something around an area that we didn't go into enough detail. So consider it interactive, and we'll go from there. The third thing is, before we begin, I hope Jesse, who's standing outside barking, got everybody to sign up to get your Surface Pro. So at the end of this session today, we'll draw a name out of a bag and we'll give one of those away. Okay? So first of all, just tell you a little bit about us. Adaptiva, we're a U.S.-based company. We're headquartered in Bellevue, Washington. As I like to say, we're just right in the shadow of Microsoft. In fact, our offices are in the Microsoft offices before they moved to their campus. Our founder was one of the principal architects of SMS 2003. So we have a long heritage and a deep understanding of what is now SECM. And we're a privately held company and growing quite well. What we have what we introduced to the market, Deepak, our founder, Deepak Kumar, when he left Microsoft, was a systems management platform that simplified the infrastructure and management of systems using SECM, utilizing enterprise peer-to-peer technology. So we built what we call the world's first smart scaling, network-aware systems management platform. And based on that platform, we built a series of products. OneSite, our content distribution engine, is our flagship product, which most of you who've talked to us this week have seen as what we'll emphasize today as we talk about Windows 10 OSD. We also have a very powerful client health product that has endpoint health checks, security checks, and remediation. And we also have a Wake on LAN solution, all built on our smart scaling platform. We have a number of partners we work with. We have some global partners like HP, IBM, Avanade, etc. We also have a number of local partners that we work with, including some of those larger ones here in Australia, but also some in domestic partners only that have done projects for us. In terms of who we work with, we're very proud of our customer base. We have, I believe, over 7 million seats of OneSite or Client Health deployed across over 200 customers globally. Across all industries, finance, government, healthcare, retail, manufacturing, utilities, etc. The common thread of all those customers is they have a lot of endpoints, and typically they're highly distributed. And so we help them in that environment to get content distributed faster, to get it done cheaper, and to get it done right. We have been fortunate enough to have worked with and provided solutions to a number of customers here in Australia. As you can see the names, people like Coles and Kmart, the Australian DoD, IAG, and others. So, like I said, it was a great opportunity for us to come down this week and actually meet a number of those customers because, frankly, most of that work had been done in conjunction with our partners, and we had supported them and worked directly with them and the customers. But it was a great opportunity to meet many of you and others in person. So today what we're going to talk about is how to speed up distribution of Windows 10 and do it stress-free. So in the course of that, we'll talk about the Windows 10 trends today, what's driving the move to Windows 10, and then what are the challenges? What are the things that our customers, who you saw the names of, are having to deal with and how they're tackling that with the solutions that we provide and other things that they're doing? We'll also talk about what we call our blueprint for Windows 10 success, which is a end-to-end assessment and approach to deploying Windows 10 that extends kind of even beyond the fringes of just our products to ensure our customers' success. And then, like I said, Chad will provide a demo, and then we'll answer questions, and then we'll give away the Surface Pro. So first of all, we did a study last year that we published talking to a number of our customers or contacts that we had and asked them about their plans for deploying Windows 10. And 2017 really was the year that they intended to start doing it in earnest. 64 of our companies that we, or percent of our companies that we talked to, said they intended to do it within the next year. The reason varied. Security was a big part of that. 82% of the enterprises said that they failed to make their company more secure. They also cited flexibility, productivity, and lower cost of ownership. So there's a lot of reasons and a lot of demand and desire to get to Windows 10. But how they're going to get there became a little bit more of a question and a challenge. Most of the customers we talked to, because they're customers of ours or people that we're talking to about being customers, are going to use SECM. You know, we're a plug-in to SECM, so by nature, that's what they would be intended to use. But I think in general, the success of SECM, the predominant market share that it has, that's the way that large enterprises intend and desire to get to Windows 10. But with SECM alone, as many of you know who have started doing it or are planning to do it, it is challenging, particularly when you talk about, you know, Windows 10, it's, you know, up to what, a 3 gig image now. It, you know, it's a gift that keeps on giving. It gets bigger. You got cumulative releases. So you've got compatibility. So there's a lot associated with just moving to that. So what we have come up with is what we've kind of labeled is stress-free migration OSD. How do we help our customers make that move and do it without, with a minimal amount of chaos and disruption and cost to their business? So let's discuss the different challenges that they have to deal with. So the first one is, and it's, you know, it's not unique to just deploying Windows 10. It's the SECM infrastructure. You know, the number of secondary servers for distribution points, Pixie, et cetera, that you have to deploy in order to effectively use the product in its native architecture mode. What we've developed is the first intelligent enterprise peer-to-peer. We eliminate the need for all of those secondary servers, and literally all of them. We have customers as large as 400,000 endpoints with no DPs. And how do we do that? We leverage the resources at your local network, the client devices, and the excess resources on those client devices to create a peer-to-peer capacity or repository for storing content instead of a distribution point. The way we do that, we have something we call our memory pipeline architecture. So the memory pipeline architecture, what it does is it allows you to get content directly to the subnet, bypassing the need for a distribution point, and to do it extremely fast. And the way that we do that is when we pull content down to the subnet, to the main client in the what we call our daisy chain, our memory pipeline, it starts passing that content onto the next device out of memory before it even writes it to disk. So you're not waiting for the first client to get done and then pass it on to the next one, or one client to pass it on to many. This one will pass it on to this one. It will pass it on to this one. If one of the clients in the chain falls out, is taken offline, crashes during the process, we have complete fault tolerance that will move on to the next one. Then we have checkpoint restart that will come back and continue on that one when it's done. So when the last one will get the content literally within minutes of the first one. The other thing that we do then, we create a self-forming virtual storage area network in the local subnet. So we are able to basically give you terabytes worth of capacity where you had a distribution point before, because we're able to take excess capacity off of all your devices, capacity that some of those devices, or most of the people don't even know they have on those devices, and create this intelligent virtual storage area network. And then we manage that real time. So it isn't something where you're going to have to allocate space, you're going to have to manage the cache. We're going to create that SAN, we're going to manage the cache, we're going to take care of when devices come in and out, when devices get to exceed capacity, which devices are the best ones to use, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an extremely self-intelligent means of providing you with that capability absent of having to have distribution servers. We never take away space from any of your end users. This is a video that I'm going to show you, and what I'm going to tell you in advance because it's hard to stop it, but what it's going to show you is how we can put content on a client device and the end user will never see any of their available space taken away. Whoops. Maybe. Chad, you want to walk them through this?
Yeah, so basically what we're looking at now is the free space on this particular volume, and then we're also going to show it in Space Sniffer where you can see the free space as well as the usage across that entire volume, and right now you can see the adaptive cache is at 5.9 gigs. Now I'm going to take 3 gig OS image and drop that into the cache. And as soon as that hits, we'll go back to Space Sniffer, and as expected, you can see the adaptive cache has grown by those 3 gigs. But the free space remains the same. And the reason for that is we're actually storing our content in unallocated clusters. We aren't marking that space as in use, so it's essentially being stored in free space.
Very good. And this is always, the reason why we like to show this is because one of the first questions is, what happens when the user comes in and sees all their space is gone? So yep. They'll never see that. They'll never see the impact of the adaptive cache on their device. So here's a case study, customer of ours, Skanska. They were deploying SCCM, upgrading it. It was going to cost them hundreds of distribution points. They basically deployed Adaptiva one site instead on a peer-to-peer, eliminated 200 servers. Their OS deployment was basically taken down to a matter of months from years. And now their OS reimaging, which is the ongoing process of managing that, just takes minutes. So the other challenge with OSD is Pixie. And, you know, how do you deal with Pixie servers? How do you deal with the network configurations that you have to do to address Pixie? And what we do is we eliminate all that. So we use the peers instead of the server. So any of the client devices can be selected as a Pixie point to provide the Pixie capability. That requires no network setup, so no IP helpers, no reconfiguration, nothing involved with that. So you can deploy Windows 10 worldwide instantly with a check of a box. You can add your own custom business rules. We'll talk about it a little bit later. We have a workflow tool that allows you to append the process. And it works even with DHCP snooping turned on. So it's a very cost-effective, I think, without mentioning names, there's a large bank, it might be the next one, that had had 390,000 endpoints around the globe that they were going to do an OSD upgrade. Prior to Windows 10, they were going to Windows 7. Based on just the network configurations that they were going to have to schedule and take, it was going to take them 3.5 years. We were able to help them get that done in less than 6 months. This is another customer of ours. I'm not going to mention them by name, but they're the largest retailer in the world. They use us for managing over 300,000 endpoints deploying Windows 10. They saved $2 million in their first major software rollout using peer-to-peer Pixie. The total labor cost savings is over $7 million. So the other challenge, migrating the user data. How do you go about making the OSD migration without potentially leaving the customer without the data or corrupting the data that they had, and thus introducing more problems? So we have a virtual state migration point mechanism that we, once again, we take that virtual SAN that we've created, we store the customer's end user's data in the virtual SAN, wipe the old OS, install the new OS, put it back on, and away they go. We capture it all before running the task sequence so that by the time the OSD Pixie is booted, the content is already stored in the SM state migration point, the virtual state migration point, and then laid back down. So literally it takes a matter of minutes to do a complete OSD. The other big challenge, and once again, this is not just an OSD challenge, this is a content delivery challenge that we deal with, but OSD introduces, you know, an exponential element to that, is the data delivery. You know, a lot of the Windows files that you're doing are 30 gig. Pushing those down over the network, you know, creates a little bit of heartburn in some cases, conflict in other cases, in terms of interrupting or affecting your enterprise traffic. So what we have is the only network-aware content distribution system. And the way that works is, in your typical means to address contention in the network, you throttle a portion of the network for content distribution. So maybe you take 20% of your network and say, okay, that's what you can use to distribute content. The 80% is for enterprise traffic. Okay, so now I can never use more than 20%. Now my enterprise traffic, it goes up and down. Sometimes I need 90% of it, and I can only get 80. Sometimes I only need 40%, and there's 40% that I'm unable to tap. Well, we have the intelligence to monitor the traffic on the network in real time and then take full advantage of all available bandwidth whenever it's available, and also to pull back and use no bandwidth when the enterprise traffic is consuming it. So what does that mean? One is no congestion, but two is I have a lot more bandwidth to get content distributed. So people like the large retailer that I mentioned had never been able to get an image pushed out to China because the network was so slow and it would take so long and everything would time out. We took advantage of every little piece. It took them 3 days, but they're able to do it. I talked to, I don't know if they're in the room here today, AGI. You know, they utilize this capability for the first time to get electronic images distributed to all their locations around the country. People like one of our large banks has had deployed it in Africa because of the network issues. We have CIBC in Canada that has branches up in northern territories. Never been able to push images and content out to those locations because of the network. And we're able to address that. Not only do it, but do it faster. So here's another demo that I'm going to show you and have Chad explain to you. And it'll show you in real time how we interpret and react to congestion on the network.
Right. Yeah, so what we're looking at here, obviously, are four VMs. The two on the left are connected to a dedicated NIC on the host, though, and the other two on the right connected to another dedicated NIC. The NICs are connected to Cisco's, tied together by a T1 line. So we have a true wide area network connection in play here. The total link speed is 180K, kind of hard to read. But without anything else going across the WAN, we're able to fill that pipe, utilize all that available bandwidth. Now coming to these other two machines, completely outside the data transfer machines, just going to do SMB file copy, simulate other business traffic. And you can see as soon as that's hit the WAN link, we've backed off. We just stop sending, allow all that other business data to go first. And basically how this is happening is these two machines down on the bottom that are doing the WAN transfer using Adaptiva, the first thing our clients will do is calculate what the threshold is for congestion on that WAN link. One of the things we do is monitor router queues. And we do that indirectly. We don't need to plug into the routers. We don't need credentials to the routers. We're just listening in on standard TCP ports to glean out that router queue length information. So then we can calculate that threshold for congestion, and as business traffic crosses that, we'll back off. But then as the business traffic comes down, we're able to intelligently see, is there 70% available? We'll fill it. Make optimum use of those resources. And we're doing this via UDP. We built our delivery protocol on UDP, but we built complete transmission control on top. And this is what allows our customers to go to the Northern Territories, remote locations in China now, where they couldn't before, because of our great, you know, all our packets are sequenced, anything that's dropped will resend. And the solutions actually have been proven. One retailer gave us the requirements. They have 19K links that have 4-second latency and 50% packet loss. We're able to deliver it every time, reliably, where TCP, any TCP-based protocol would never be able to.
Great. Thank you, Chad.
Yep.
So, yeah, so the predictive bandwidth harvesting has probably been the most significant technology that our customers have realized from our product. Obviously, the peer-to-peer, the cost savings and, you know, all the advantages of that. But this technology here is something that has really transformed their ability to zero-touch content distribution throughout their enterprise. We also have other things that we do around speeding up the distribution. We have something we call NetBoost, which basically also guarantees you a responsiveness level within your network link. So bandwidth is bandwidth, but what do users care about? How responsive is my network? So we address that. We also have Flow Equalizer, which does time slicing of the distribution so that you're able to get everything out there equally as fast as possible. So do a lot of things. Compression. So we spend a lot of time and technology ensuring the speed in which your content's going to be delivered is optimized to the fullest extent. This is a newsletter. By the way, this is not a leak. This is actually was something that was shared with us by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. I just said that because I know you were all thinking it. What the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is a customer of ours that is deploying Adaptiva OneSight and our client health product for Windows 10 migration. Now, they are a branch of the U.S. Army that is in a lot of different remote locations, you know, because they deal with different things than necessarily defense. And so content speed, network links was a big issue for them. So when they did their no-touch deployment pilot last year, they tested a 1.6 gigabyte package over a marginal WAN link. It had been taking 97 minutes in the past. When they use our virtual deployment point, it took less than 2 minutes. They then did another one, a 1.6 gigabyte app over a congested T1 that had been taking them 5.5 hours to a remote location. Took them less than a minute. So these are real live examples of customers, you know, getting extreme, not just marginal benefit, but extreme benefit of our technology to get their content distribution. And the reason why they're going with us is because federal government is under mandate to get to Windows 10 a month ago. So they're behind. And so now they're scrambling to get it out there as soon as possible. But on the other hand, you know, this is, you know, the U.S. Army, you know, they need to do it right. They need to do it, you know, securely. And so we're a vital part of that and happy to be a partner with them. Here's a case study, another case study of customer TNT, 42,000 endpoints. Network was a big problem. There are a lot of remote locations that you're probably familiar with. Worked with them, Microsoft, HPE, and Computer Center, a local partner, to deploy. It eliminated 430 servers and saved over £1 million. One other challenge that our customers have told us over the years is the visibility and control of our content distributions. You know, we had a customer the other day that said they'd push out an image, customer never saw anything about it until 3 days later. The customer said, "Where is it? We haven't seen it." Went in and looked, oh, it never got delivered. But they had nothing to tell them that happened. So what we introduced about a year and a half ago is something called LiveFlow that gives you real-time visibility of your distributions and real-time control over those. And Chad's going to go into that more in his demo, but I just wanted to touch on showing you the console and what it does. So you can select a location. You select that location, it's going to show you all the content distributions to that location. It's going to tell you what priority they are, what percentage of it's been transferred, how much data is remaining, how much longer it should take, the average speed, the current speed, etc. Now, so that's great. I can see what's going on. But what can I do about it? Well, I could go in and I could pause that transfer. For some reason, I determined there was a problem and I didn't want it to continue. I could pause it. I could pause them all. We determined the image was not a great image. Then I can take the pause away. I just restart it. It's a checkpoint restart. So it's not a kill it and start over. Basically, we do a checkpoint restart right from that point and complete. I can change the priority. We have 255 different priority levels, very granular, in real time. If I determine, this one all of a sudden because of the phone call I got is more important than that one, it becomes 202 priority, and it starts happening faster. So incredible visibility, incredible control that you'll not find anywhere else. We also have something, I don't know, Chad will show you, the big red button. All hell breaks loose, stop everything. You push the big red button, everything will stop. And then you can take that away and everything will resume right where it was. So I'll just put it out there right now. One of the best benefits and use of this from our customer standpoint is self-protection from accusation from the network guy. He comes in and he says, you're killing the network. You're pushing all that content, and we know we're not killing it because I showed you, right? We back off. So he says, okay, let's find it. Let's pause it. What's going on the network? It's still screwed. Well, see, it's not me. So that now in of itself pays for a lot of people's purchase. So this is also visibility about where your content is. So you're not having to search around for it. So we provide you with a dashboard as well as a whole bunch of different reports. So you're able to figure out where your content is, what's been delivered by machine, by office, by content type. And these are some of the reports. You can see what's missing. So you can go by location and see, where do I not have Windows 10 or where do I not have Office 365? The other thing that we have is very, very powerful and our more sophisticated customers take a lot of utilization of is the workflow. We have a workflow tool that is extremely powerful that allows you to create. First of all, let me step back. Everything in our product, everything that you saw when we're showing you our product and Chad's going to show you, is built on this workflow engine. So we built components that operate on this workflow engine, meaning that you can go in and you can expose any of those in the workflow, and you can then append or modify or create your own. So you can, like I was talking about in terms of, your OSD being able to modify your Pixie sequence or your BIOS or UEFI process, all those things. You're able to take what we have off the shelf, let it run, but then go in and modify it yourself. You can integrate other data. You can go query information. You can create binaries. So it's a very, very powerful tool. We have one customer, and it'll show up here, that uses it to do not only the deployment, but then do the health checks of all their devices. They run 8 million health checks and remediations a day using the workflow tool. This is what it looks like. Like I said, it comes with a designer, the engine, an SDK. There's 100 built-in activities. It's a drag and drop. Very, very powerful. And like I said, it's something as you start looking at end-to-end processes like OSD where you're having to do things, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, some of the stuff we're doing with our customers to help them prepare to do Windows 10 migration, the workflow comes in very handy. And yeah, this is the bank, I think, that they eliminated 5,000 servers, reimaged 2,500 machines a week. I mentioned BIOS and UEFI. Migration, a lot of the devices out there, in place, upgrades, you want to take advantage of the security, Windows 10, so, they're running BIOS, now they can run UEFI, so we've developed a workflow, allow that to be incorporated into your OSD process, zero touch, works, we have it certified for HP, Dell, and Lenovo, and basically what we did, on full disclosure, we took the utilities they provide, we didn't reinvent them. We incorporated them into the workflow, into our OSD process, so that you don't have to go out and touch it. AECOM, another big customer of ours. And this is actually this is a good use case here, because I'm sure that you guys, like us, have a lot of mergers and acquisitions. And AECOM is a company that grew by acquisition. When they bought, they were running SECM. They bought a new company, equal size, that ran Altiris. How do we get on the same platform? So utilizing our platform, they were able to roll out SECM to the Altiris environment in literally a matter of months. They were able to get to a standard platform in 6 months that was projected in using native SECM was going to take them 2.5 years. Part and parcel to that project, and I mentioned the workflow, we build a workflow specifically to help our customers migrate from Altiris to SECM. So if you, I don't know how popular Altiris is here, but we're seeing a lot of Altiris customers moving to SECM, and just like OSD, getting there is challenging. They've got their content in an Altiris client. They've got it set up certain ways within, you know, task sequences within Altiris. So making that transition was the risky part. Getting running on SECM was not risky. So we built a workflow that automated that process and de-risked that process and allowed them to reduce it from a year to months. So I talked about what we're doing now is extending what we help our customers do as it relates to migrating to Windows 10. Because the part that I showed you is all the intelligence and automated stuff that we've built in and worked today and it's worked forever and it's kept pace. But what we find is that getting to the point to take advantage of our product is a barrier to our customers' migration. So, architecting the solution, rationalizing your applications, figuring out where the proper applications are, they're going to run on Windows 10, all those types of things need to happen up front before I can take advantage of all this wonderful technology that Adaptive is showing us today. So we're working with our customers building utilities, working with some third parties to help them get through that process so that they can then start doing the actual execution of migration Windows 10. We're also building in some specific, or taking advantage of some specific client health checks that we have, so that once they do it, they can run these health checks, validate that everything's worked. If it didn't work, they run automatic remediation. If the remediation for some reason doesn't work, then it provides them an exception. So once again, on the front end and the back end of OSD is a lot of work and a lot of risk that, you know, is part of the reason why there's reluctance to move to Windows 10 at the pace that the marketplace really wants to move. And so, frankly, for us, it's a barrier to people using our product, so we're spending time and effort to help them tackle that as well. So, I know many of you have stopped by, but please come by afterwards if you have more questions. I'm going to hand it over to Chad now to provide you with a demonstration of the functionality. Before he takes over, does anybody have any specific questions? Oh, yeah, come
absolutely.
On.
No.
Yeah, yeah, no.
I'm just wondering about the content on the that gets distributed, obviously, with P2P around all the workstations. Is there a way of scrubbing content that perhaps hasn't replicated correctly or is perhaps orphaned when that occurs?
Well, if it doesn't replicate correctly, then it's going to fail our hash. We have a hash validation just the same as SECM. So we're going to automatically scrub that and re-download it. As far as other content, when it gets pushed out, you really don't need to. If you remove the content from SECM, we're automatically going to remove it from our caching file system. All of our clients that have that content would be removed. But otherwise, there's no need to go in and clean out data because of the way that the virtual SAN management works. We hadn't discussed yet, but our content deletion process isn't like a revolving cache where it's just going to arbitrarily remove the oldest piece of content, but rather we have content awareness between all of our peers. So we're going to go ahead and remove the content that's most prevalent at a site. So it gives you the ability to maintain all that content. So long as it's still in SECM, if it's been pushed out to a remote location, in case it's ever needed there again, we're going to maintain it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's either not removed correctly, sometimes it just doesn't remove it, whatever reason.
Oh.
You say it's orphaned.
Yeah, no, that's not an issue. Yeah, not an issue that our customers face at all.
Okay.
All right, any other questions to address before getting into a little bit more on the OSD side of things? Okay. Yeah, so you know, Jim did a really good job of framing for us here the processes of getting that content down. But now, as we have that content distributed or you get it into Adaptiva, how does the OSD process, what does that really look like? And to start with, I'm going to go into a content push perspective. And this is going to be our pre-staging technology, a great way to get that content pushed out before you run your first task sequence, and great technologies around maintaining it. So for a standard push policy, we're just going to go ahead and fill out this form, called it OSD. And now what I'm doing is I'm dragging and dropping a task sequence into the content list. So now all of that reference content is automatically pulled in. And now that we're managing it by task sequence, you're able to work in SCCM, manage that task sequence, and manage these push policies within SCCM based on this notion of auto-push content changes. So in SCCM, you make an update to a WIM. We're going to then create a differential file, get that pushed out, get that added to this push policy, and replicate it out to your remote offices right away. Or you add a new piece of content through SQL triggers is where we're getting this information. And we're going to go ahead, get that added, any new content added to these push policies, and again, get your remote offices updated with the latest contents. In terms of targeting, start with scheduling, you know, ASAP, given the way we manage the bandwidth. And then for targeting, you can easily use all Adaptiva clients. Now, if you're using all Adaptiva clients, you're not going to need all reference content on every single PC. That's going to be resource overkill. So that's where we have, where I'm up at the top of the screen now, this notion of IntelliStage. You tell us the minimum number of contents you want at your remote locations. And if you're just talking about break-fix scenarios for ongoing maintenance, what we found through working with our customers through all the years is three copies of content is going to make that content highly available. It's always going to be there for when you need to do a build. If you're looking at a task sequence project, what we recommend is sourcing about a third of the number of concurrent builds you would be doing. Which is to say, if you're going to do 30 builds at the same time at a remote location, you'd need about 10 copies of every reference piece of content. And then another thing that I'm going to do here is adding in a maintenance schedule. And the idea here is you can do a schedule of anything you want. It's a really pretty aggressive to do an everyday one, but very common. And now what we're going to do with this every weekday at noon is this push policy will rerun at that remote location, validate we still have that minimum number of sources. And if we get down to something like the ConfigMan client, for whatever reasons, we've lost one of those sources, we'll locally source a third copy. And all of this is being done intelligently using an election criteria. We're always going to pick look at the workstation chassis type, pick the desktops over the laptops. We'll also look at the operating system. If we have a client running on a server, we're going to look at that as more highly available than a workstation. So we'll leverage that. Also look at the system resources, free space on those drives, picking those machines that we feel, once we copy the content to them, it's going to be able to be maintained or the best chance of being maintained. And also looking at system uptime. So now that we have the push policy in place, and now coming back into the content visibility. And again, Jim had shown this. This is our content distribution status, where you can go in, do one-off validations on a particular piece of content, look at the office, and then you can see all of the machines with download status for those particular that particular content. And over on the left, the Content Explorer, that's your entire SCCM content library. So very easy for one-off validations. Now, real good for, if an executive needs Visio or something. But when it comes to task sequence readiness, that's where the reports come in much more handy. You can get the detailed content locations at a particular site, just plug in the task sequence name, the name of your office. And now I can see all of the machines that have this content cached right now in real time. This is on status receipts in our SQL database. And then if you know you need to do a build in London, can come in, see what's missing, more of a summary. Now, if I know I need to do a build there, those missing contents are now my highest priority for London. So with that information now, again, we can come into the live flow. What I'm doing right there is remove to pause. that I had for my entire London office, because I have a lot of content queued up for there. But that's part of the granular control. You can pause individually on a specific office. You can, of course, use the big red button to pause all content globally to everywhere. Again, something the SECM community has been asking for years, and Australia actually has a great example of why, with a bank that ran into some trouble there. So now as the content's starting to queue up for London, we can see all the content. You're going to be able to see, of course, the current speeds, the average speeds, and again, the priorities, of course. And right now it's just working everything out. And eventually the content with 180, that's the default that we have for high priority packages. Our highest default is 200, which is going to be for high priority software updates. And yeah, you're going to be able to come in here, make that granular control where now I can go over, find my OS image. It's behind a high priority package for this particular location, but then I can come in, change the priority on the fly for that one. You think about doing that with a distribution point, you're going to have to kill whatever is in the pipe right now, restart from byte number one to get a higher priority out. We're going to pause, send that checkpoint restart, connect to a different source even if we have to across the WAN. And send that checkpoint restart. And we can also change protocols. So if you think about a zero-day update, another nice feature, we can come in limit, I'm limited to offices, but I could limit to actual content, come in, highlight that content, give it my highest priority, jumps to the top of the queue to all your offices, and then also change the transport. What we had demonstrated for you with the predictive bandwidth harvesting is the fastest way to send content without interrupting business traffic. But if you had a zero-day update, that might be your most important piece of business traffic. So you could even change the transport here. Use a foreground driver as opposed to our background driver. And at that point, we're just going to dump that content to the router queues without consideration for whether or not we're going to cause congestion. Here's the form for enabling Pixie. We're not going to enable that by default. So you just come in here, check the box, give us the path to ADK. Not that we're going to be installing ADK on the endpoint systems. Just about 2 megs worth of files, your pixieboot.com, bootmgr.exe, to give to those systems that you want to have the ability to become a Pixie server. And that's all going to be targeted down here with the targeted collections. Pixie's a very lightweight protocol. Most customers are just going to use all Adaptiva clients. But we do have the SECM Collection Explorer there on the right. If you did have any other locations that you wanted to use WDS or something like that, you could build a collection around excluding those locations, and we would only enable Pixie where you have Adaptiva. And then, yeah, really it takes about 5 to 10 minutes. Even HSBC, we eliminated the their OSD project to 6 months. But Pixie itself just takes 5 to 10 minutes. And again, that's because there's no need for those helpers or those scope options to be put in place. So very quick and easy to get that rolled out. Now we'll have a look. This is a bare metal build task sequence. And there's 4 simple steps that you're going to need to configure. The first is going to be this new task sequence variable. Well, I keep calling it new, but it was from 2012. The SMSTS download program. Once you set that to the location of our one-site downloader, now the task sequence engine knows that anytime it gets to a package, it's going to hand off that package acquisition to the one-site downloader, and we're going to go to our peer-to-peer structure to get that. Next step, copy the one-site downloader, because we'll go ahead and get that mounted into your WIM. So we'll copy it to C before the reboot to full Windows, so we can reset the task sequence variable there. And then the 4th step is to install the Adaptiva client. And you'll want to do this as a package because at that point, the one-site downloader can handle packages. But the task sequence engine itself is only responsible for package acquisition. But when it gets to a SUP or an app, it hands off to the full ConfigMan client. So at that point, you'll just want to install Adaptiva client so we can take the handoff from the ConfigMan client for that content. And now, going to start a build. You know, it's the Pixie protocol. A few differences in the terms of our content acquisition. But the machine's going to send its broadcast. Here on the right, I'm looking at the machine that is filling the Pixie role at that particular time. And it's the first thing it's doing is it's connecting with our server to run a stored procedure on the SCCM database, find the task sequence that's assigned, find the boot image for that task sequence. And now we can see the machine that's uploading the WIN. And if you can't see the IP address, it's actually the 100.4 IP address that's doing the TFTP transfer of the boot WIN. And coming in to the log, the Pixie log there, we can see the DHCP discover, the offers, on down through the process to nominating the TFTP server of that .4 machine. But if we look at my Pixie server, this has the .2 address. And again, there's no need for the Pixie server to have even a single piece of content. We can get that from any other client that's locally available in that remote location. Yeah, just a few more seconds for PE to get all initialized and loaded. And coming in here, I'm just going to go ahead. I mounted the OneSite downloader at the root of X here. And this log here, that's the RVP supporter. The Pixie role is also going to have another dynamic role. That's going to be the RVP. And it's not a master system, it's just a coordinator. And in this case, for OSD, it's coordinating the content location request on behalf of that machine that's being built. So once it's going to ask for the OS image, then it's going to reach out to the RVP. The RVP does the content location request. All the machines that have that content respond in with their election criteria. At that point, the RVP selects the three machines with the highest election criteria. And the reason for that is the failover. If that first machine that we're downloading from goes down, then we're immediately going to be able to fail over to another system. Again, send that checkpoint restart to resume that download where we left off. And that's something new in the product, the latest release that was just released last week, because now we're able to use Adaptiva protocols for this content acquisition. Previously, it had been unpacked to hidden SMB file shares. It's still going to be an option, but using the non-SMB sources here is a lot more efficient for those workstations that are being the source for those contents. They're going to be able to handle many more uploads with fewer resources. But even there, we do low-level these builds. The RVP has that intelligence of knowing if one machine is already uploading an OS image to another build, you start a second build, then that election criteria on that other machine goes down, so we're going to be able to find other machines that aren't busy with Adaptiva traffic or anything else and use those machines for any subsequent builds to get fired off. And that was the end of the OSD portion of the demo. Any questions end-to-end on the solution? Yeah. Yes.
Directly accessing it, or does it actually download it first and install the image, or directly accessing the file?
Yeah, no, it will download first, and then once the download is complete, then it would start the applying of it.
Okay. And I'm assuming that host dropped that was serving the content, and it'd go to another host and would start from the beginning again?
No. No, well, if it's an SMB file copy using our previous technology, then it would be a restart. But now with our adaptive protocols using non-SMB, yeah, it's a checkpoint restart again. All the packets are going to be sequenced, and we know right where we left off and find the new source and let it know the packet we need. Yes? Yeah, you would not want to do, sometimes there is a reason to do download all prior, and that's for our customers that don't have another peer that they can build off of. If you have a client in an office and it's only that one single system, then we do have the ability to pre-stage all of that content to our cache, and then you could do a download all prior. Now, you were not going to be able to do a reformat on that drive, but you would be able to do an in-place upgrade.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. No. A lot of great engineering because we're using the UDP protocols. There's no SMB file copy sessions, no TCP sessions. It's an extremely lightweight way to get that out without impacting those user resources. Now, with that said, our customers definitely have, or at least our customers that we'd work directly with, their bosses have a perception of some systems that they don't want to participate in this process. Our retailers, their point-of-sale systems, bank teller systems. So we do have a really easy way. When you're targeting Pixie, anything like these, you can always use the All Adaptiva clients for some of these things, but we also have a notion of client type where you can prohibit systems. All centrally managed from our workbench. You can target collections from SCCM, build collections around your POS systems, things like that. And basically, that's just going to turn off peer sharing. They're still going to have to, of course, download the content assigned to them, but they would just never share that content with any other systems. Yeah?
Is there a way to construct a query, for example, say you might want to include all laptops that are named in a certain way? There's a methodology of that, perhaps. So you only want to set desktops to be peers and not laptops or service pros or tablets?
Yeah, definitely could do that through, it's going to be a SCCM-based query collection. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we do, on the flip side of prohibited, we also have a client type that's preferred. If you have any highly available systems that you can recognize, build a collection around, or you can, it's just a registry key that you, if you had any office, you just wanted to flip that switch in the registry. Those systems now are going to take an aggressive role in winning all the elections. They're going to become the RBP Pixie server as well as the source for all the content.
Question?
Yeah. Earlier on, you said when you've got the adaptive cache, it's building up, but it doesn't necessarily show the user space that you've taken.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, the space is actually being allocated to adaptive, what happens if user action starts to encroach on the cache?
Well, then we're going to get our content deletion request. And with the content awareness that we built in, every time a machine receives or removes a piece of content, we're putting that into a small file database. So we know in real time what content all the other peers have, which gives us the net result of what content's most prevalent. So then we're immediately going to be able to process a deletion request to free that space. And we don't actually harvest all of the unused space. We do leave a gig free or 2% of the drive by default. Everything is very easily configurable through the workbench, sending out different policies if you need. So we're always going to be able to free that space immediately, and there's going to be no leg there for the user. Yes? Obviously it can. So when you're talking about servers, customers are going to, protect their Exchange if they still have that on-prem. Just prohibit those systems, those server systems that you want to be sure that are the more high visibility systems, and then use the other servers to be the content sources.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. I think we just got one thing left here.